Welcome to Oak City Church, a family of learners, lovers, and givers sent. For more information, visit us online at oakcitychurch.com. Let us know if we can help you in any way. Thank you for listening.
Now, we're in this series. It's the sixth week of the series. And so let me spend just a minute talking through the different things that we've been going through in that series. So the first week was just this kind of orientation on what the Bible says about work. I think a lot of times in our culture, we think of work as a curse, but the Bible says work is a blessing. We're made in the image of a God, and the first thing we see that God do is work and create and produce and design, and then he calls us into the work that he created. And so work is a blessing. It's not without toil because of sin, but it's fundamentally a blessing, and he's made you for good work to do. The second week, I looked at just what it looks like when we get work wrong. So when we expect the work to serve us instead of us serving the work. And so when we expect the work to serve us, we can put the work in the place of God and expect the work to do things for us that only God can do. We can expect the work to provide for us when God's the one that's going to provide for us. And the work to name us and give us an identity and status and significance and meaning when only God can do that. And he does that in Christ. And so when we get the work wrong, that's what we looked at the second week. And the third week was when we get the work right. So when we serve the work, and that work is an opportunity to worship God and to love your neighbor. And so all work serves all work, and just looking at the bigger picture of that. And then the fourth week, we looked at rest and Sabbath and what those rhythms are that God created us for. Last week, I had a buddy come in and talk about just some practical, he helps coach people into their calling. So he had some real practical questions and steps to get from here to there. And then this week, I've got some folks that have been around at Oak City Church for a long time. They've heard teaching on work from me and from other folks for a long time. And I've just had conversations with them where I know this is settled in over long periods of time and really made a difference in how they think about their work, the attitude they take towards their work, and decisions that they made over years that have been hard. But we've got enough time underneath that to see some hindsight and some perspective, and they're in a good place with their work. So that's what we're doing this morning, is we're going to talk to these folks. We do, every August, we do a series called, or every August except this last one, a series called Where is God When Life Happens? And it's like this, where we talk to folks about different situations they've been in and just get to see testimonies of how God has worked in real ways in real people's lives. And we didn't do that this August because of just a handful of different things going on, and maybe because it turns out we're doing it in November. So this week is the last week of this series. We're going to talk to these folks. Next week is Orphan Sunday. Church celebrates Orphan Sunday. God has done so much stuff in and through our church in the last few years. He is a father of the fatherless, and he has called people within our church to, you know, engage that. And so we're going to hear some of those stories, and they're amazing. The week after that, we are going to do a joint service with a church across the parking lot called Chosen Generation, which is a primarily African-American church. And we've been engaged in some racial reconciliation small group studies with them for probably the past 5 or 6 months. They've been amazing. I haven't seen stuff like this happen in not just our church, any church, with the types of conversations that we're having and the relationships that have been formed. And so we're going to celebrate that. I'm going to talk to the two women that are leading that from each church and how that came about, what God's doing, and what's next. We're going to have a joint service with them. And so y'all better be ready for that, because they're a little bit more lively than you are, okay? Now, I think about this morning, like this is a great morning of worship, but sometimes we just put a lid on it. You know what I mean? Like, we put a lid on it, and what we'll get to is we'll just kind of sway a little bit. That's not them, y'all. They don't got a lid, okay? So just be ready. And I'm going to go down there next week, and I'm going to invite them up here. I mean, they've been invited, but I just want to let them know that we're all in and super excited about this, and I'm going to tell them that. You guys are a little bit more lively than we are, and I'm going to say, you do you, okay? So they're going to come up here and be them, and so you be ready. And you'll be challenged and pushed, and I'm going to pray that God takes the lid off of it. It makes sense? Yes. Yes. You can cheer. It's okay. You can do that stuff. Okay. Okay. Is that all I wanted to say up front? I think so. So the question that and I've had these conversations with these four for over years, so I know their stories, and the work on this has been done over long years periods of time. But I asked them to respond to me and via email, and then we each talked about just how God has, over time, the gospel and the Bible's teaching on work has shaped, changed the way they think about their work, the attitude they bring towards their work, or specific decisions they made regarding their work. So let's, did you start last time? Let's do that again. We'll kind of go down that path. That's good. That was good. You did good.
Hi, everyone.
Good work, Kendall.
I'm Kendall, and we've talked about this for a number of years. Jeff and I, and he'll talk more about that later on. But I look back on how God has worked in me over the last 4 or 5 years, and just how much sin was exposed back in, say, 2014, and how I absolutely felt that work should be serving me, and I idolized the money I was making. And I think one impactful moment in a series when we were talking about work 4 or 5 years ago was when Jeff mentioned that we were made for work, and I never looked at work that way. I was very controlling, very self-righteous, very work should be serving me, and I should be making a certain level of income. And if I didn't make that certain level of income, or if I did, then it wasn't enough and I should be making more. And I just had an awful outlook on work. And I fast forward to where I am now in a place of servant leadership. And I manage a group of people where I serve them and I advocate for them. And I live out the passions that John mentioned. What energizes you, he asked last week. And I think about the fact that I love developing and coaching and leading and mentoring others, and that's what I'm able to do now. And to get to where I am now meant to die to myself and to listen to God and to take a huge leap of faith that I didn't know that I really had the ability to take until I finally did it. And I'm so thankful that I did, and I leaned on the fact that I needed to trust in not on my own understanding, but lean on God and let him work this out, not myself.
And you started at a place where most people think they want to be, which is you didn't have to work very hard and you made a lot of money.
Yeah, I was in sales at the time, and I built out a territory, and it became very successful, and I literally could go into the office and surf the net for 9 hours and make a really good paycheck. And I was like, I'm not made for this. I've grown complacent. I'm not being challenged. And this is not what God has called me to do.
Yeah. And so that just in itself, like a vision of there's something different. This is not the way that things are supposed to be, and a conviction to get out of that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But just the steps to get out of that is where all that started. Dan, you had something similar.
Yeah. So my name is Dan. So I had two jobs, but the one that I became an identity was I was a Major League Soccer referee, so MLS, and I refereed professional soccer for 7 years. I traveled a lot. I had executive platinum on the time it was U.S. and then American Airlines. I knew how to travel. I was a big deal, and it was pretty cool. I was.
It's kind of a big deal around here.
And the fact that you could go on ESPN2 and you could see me refereeing, and I got kicks that Jeff would turn on and watch me, right? Like, so in 2016... we were pregnant with our second child, due that December, and I felt like God was saying, hey, this is an identity. You are worshiping your job versus worshiping me in it. So that was the first part. And so I was kind of wrestling with that and praying through it. And then there was the aspect that, hey, you do have a second kid, and you're traveling a lot. Am I serving my wife and my one? We had Josiah, and Abraham was on the way. I was like, am I serving them? And then to top it off, like, God is really getting my attention. And he said, hey, by the way, you should go lead the high school boys. And I was like, oh, man. Going from being on ESPN2 to leading our high school boys. And so God, I really wrestled that. And so in that April, I told Pro, hey, I'm done with MLS. And they bugged me until about December. But after I went to Sam and said, hey, I feel like God's calling me to do high school. Joe, who was leading our high school boys, 2 weeks later said, by the way, I'm leaving Oak City. It was totally God's timing of it. And Jeff asked my wife what she thought, like, and it has strengthened our marriage. We're expecting our third kid in a couple weeks, so.
Yeah, Dan and I were talking about that this week, and he said it was an identity for him, the reffing thing. And I said, yeah, it was an identity for me because I knew you, and you were reffing on ESPN2. He reffed, if you know soccer at all, he reffed an exhibition between Manchester City and Sporting Kansas City the year they both won their respective leagues. Those were the days, Dan. No, I'm just kidding. That was a good decision, but it was hard. Shannon, you had something similar about just
sure
decisions God called you to.
Yep. Hey, I'm Shannon. So a few years ago, kind of actually Kendall and I think we're on the same track there. You know, I felt God just calling me to be closer to Raleigh. So I was working in Chapel Hill, which doesn't seem that long, but with traffic sometimes it is. And we were just going through a lot of change with our family and just kept feeling like I needed to be closer to Raleigh with appointments that we had going on. And so I made a change and it was, you know, I'd say going into the change, I didn't necessarily identify, or I didn't think I identified with my work that I was doing, but realized quickly that I did, because I really didn't want to make that move. And so left kind of the university system and went to the budget office. Was only there a short period of time, and then I felt like God was calling me to go someplace else, and that was a whole nother, I guess, wrestling with, this isn't a great career move. You know, going from one, taking a step down for one, but then to turn around a few months later and leave a job thinking, well, that's not great for your career either. Just kind of shuffling between jobs. So I understand.
Yes. And I have a feeling that Shannon was kind of a big deal too, but in a way that we don't understand that Shannon was a big deal, because we don't understand the world that she was in. I asked her first service, what do you do again? And this is a question I have to ask people this a bunch of times. People will tell me what they do, and I just don't, maybe I'm just not that bright, and so I don't understand it. That could well be. Someone asked me before service, they said they were in the pharmaceutical industry. I'm like, what does that mean? You could run a meth lab for all I know. Like, what is that? That wasn't Shannon. She doesn't run a meth lab, and she's not in pharmaceuticals. But you said you were like a vice president with the university system?
Yeah, so the university system, there's a central office for all 17 institutions. And so I was vice president for operational efficiency. I told Jeff that I didn't know what I did when he asked me what I did, because I half the time don't. But and so, you know, really just, it was a great new program. We were doing a lot of things that kind of went across all of the institutions. And so I left there and went to the state budget office, where I was pretty much an analyst. And it was great.
Yeah, and so I just think that's significant, and I think it's common, like in these, where you get to a place where you think you want to be and you're supposed to be, and then God says, oh, I got something else in mind, and like it's, you know, it's going to cost you something, and that's probably should just be expected. Julie.
Yes.
Julie is, Julie's, so we're going to cut to the chase on Julie's story. She graduated from Meredith. Type A kind of high achiever type thing, and didn't get the job she wanted, or like it just wasn't what you
right.
Thought
yeah,
it
I graduated
would be.
During the middle of the recession, so I just took what I could get.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then you did transition to a job that you went to school, and then you told your work that, and that made your job even worse.
Yeah, I decided I was doing design, which is what I went to school for, interior design. And then
because she now does freelance work in interior
I do,
design.
Julie Watkins
Interiors.
So if
you were looking for an interior designer,
if you
Julie
need
Watkins,
anything, I'm
gentlemen.
Your girl. All right, so I was doing interior design, but for this commercial, I was designing science labs, which sounds about as exciting as it was not my gifting at all. So I decided to go back to school, to graduate school, which really didn't make much sense, but just felt moved to do that for teaching. But there isn't a degree for teaching interior design, so I got spec ed, special education, because that is another kind of passion of mine. But right in the middle of all that, God put a high school teaching job to teach interior design into my lap. So I really
saw
that.
And you loved it.
I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, excelled at it, did what, placed first in the nation. My girls did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, loved it. I excelled. We were having fun.
But then God had other plans for that.
Yes. So my second year of teaching, I had my first kid, Ezra. And then didn't really struggle as much with going back to work after that. I still was very career focused. As I said in first service, he was kind of a hard baby. So I like willingly was like, here, your turn. I'm going to work. So I didn't really struggle with that decision then. But about 2.5 years later, I had my girl Ava. And even going out with Ava, literally thought I would be coming right back after maternity leave and working and kind of doing my thing. But through a series of my husband and God, there were three nights in a row at 3 a.m. where God woke me up, which to all the mothers out there, when you're tired and sleep deprived, it's not fun. But so the first night, I just kind of shrugged it off, woke up, looked at my phone. It was 3. Ava was asleep. Didn't really know what woke me up. It just rolled right back over. Second night, same thing. Ava's asleep. Phone says 3. We had just done that prayer thing. So I was like, maybe this is God. So I kind of did a half prayer, like, hey, God, I'm listening. I'm yours. Tell me what to do. Yeah. Rolled back over. Third night, I can be feisty. That's some people call me that. So third night, I was like, what? I'm tired. It's 3 a.m. What? And I just heard this, and it, like, gave me chills, this soft, gentle whisper of stay home. And so I was like, all right, I got to do that. Brandon had been telling me that for weeks. I'd been crying and very anxious and just in a really bad place with going back to work. My budget looked pretty with me having a job, and it didn't work at all. Still doesn't work at all with me not having a job, but God has proven.
But you were faithful. Convinced that was God.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But this wasn't like a vision on the ceiling.
Nope, just
wasn't
a little
wasn't an audible
little
voice that woke Brandon up to.
Nope, just a little gentle stay home.
Just for whatever. But how many people felt like that God has whispered something and that they just got a sense this was God? And so that first service, a lot of people have felt that.
But I doubted it, because that's what I do.
How many people have doubted that it was God after God told them the thing that he told them?
It didn't make sense on paper. It made no sense. And I didn't want that. That wasn't what I thought was my career path. I had always wanted to follow this career. And if anything, we joked that Brandon would be the stay-at-home dad, because he's better with the kids, still is better with the kids than I am. He has patience. I don't. God's teaching me things. So what me and Brandon decided to do was to do a 21-day Daniel fast, just for affirmation for me, because he was clear, he knew, but he did it with me. And we were praying through some specific things in there, the two or main ones, being one, just for God's provision. I was really, really worried about those numbers not working, and because we were going to be losing 60% of our income. This was no small decision. And the second was just for God to provide a job of some sort, a part-time, very part-time job, where I could still stay home, but do some work outside of the home. And so during that 21 days, there was one story that I love. I was fretting over owing my sister-in-law $10, which she did not care at all, but I cared because I told her I was going to pay her back, so I wanted to pay her back. So I'm fretting. It's the end of the month. Me and Brandon both get paid at the beginning of the month, so we were broke. We had nothing. And I had left for work that morning, so I had gone out, got into my car, driven to work. About 30 minutes being into work, my mom called because she was coming that day to kind of help me with some house stuff. And she said, hey, Jules, I found a $10 bill in the middle of your driveway. I put it in your drawer. And I just praised me some Jesus at Sanderson High School, because that was so God. Like, first of all, $10 bill, that's rare. Not everyone carries around their tens, I think. But it just flew through the atmosphere and landed in my driveway. And there it was. And that's what I needed. And I gave it to my sister-in-law.
And how many people have had God do something like that where you just knew that it was God providing in some way that only God would do? But really, like, it might only make sense to you. You know what I mean? Because I feel like God does that. And you had a handful of different stories.
Yeah. I had a job interview that I was fretting over. And then I prayed on the way there, like, if you want me to take this specific part-time job, make it clear, because I'm really confused right now. I'm really anxious right now. Like, you're asking me to do a lot. And so I showed up at the job interview. I sat down in the chair, and they said, you're Julie, right? And I said, yeah. They're like, okay, you have the job. Here's your W-2. I need you to sign right here, and this is what you're going to do, and you're going to start next week. And I was like, okay, that's clear as clear can be. So God made me do it, and I'm glad. It's hard. It's the hardest job I've ever had, raising two children. But
you're glad.
But I'm glad. I have a peace that I never had before. Like, about all the jobs, and so, like, he just, like, I know I'm in his will, and there's a peace that comes with that, so.
Sweet. I go back to Kendall, and because just talk a little bit about your transition, because from the point where you started of realizing, oh, shoot, I'm in the wrong place, like, this is the place I thought I was supposed to be in, but it's very evident it's the wrong place. It took you how many years to get to the place where now you feel like, oh, this is the place?
Yeah, and I think even where I'm at now, it took an additional, so I'd say the journey was 4 years, but then it took an additional year to kind of the realization of, is this on?
I don't know. Did something happen to the mic? Is it on? His beard is muffling the mic.
So So I'm going to act like I'm singing and have my lips touch it. So anyway, what was I saying? That's a bit of a distraction. Sorry. So yeah, it took a year into where I'm at currently, going on 2 years now, to really fully understand and have the clarity of what God was doing in all of that. You know, you go through these things. God allows you to go through these things. He's you know, like you say, you know, he's doing something in you so he can do something through you. And it took every bit of those 5 years, I'd say, to fully understand why he allowed me to go through those various trials and to find joy in those and rest in James 1 and to trust and lean not on my own understanding but trust in God. You know, those the Proverbs and James is really what I had to lean on, because it was not a fun time, and I was very resistant to make that change. Extremely resistant to make that change because I was comfortable. I didn't have to do anything. I was comfortable. And, you know, if to leave that was going to be very difficult for me, and it was.
Yeah.
But it's what needed to happen to break me of control, to break me of me finding love and money, to, break me of so many idols and sins and bring me closer to God.
Yeah, and there were just, Kendall is and I are in a core group together forever, so I've walked through this stuff with him. Like, he ended up with a job with kind of a startup-ish type company that, with a British guy, and you had your executive board meetings in a castle in England, so that wasn't too rough. I was like always like, you need somebody to carry your bags. You're in a castle, you need a cupbearer. You need someone to taste your food, because bad stuff happens there, and so I'm your man. But it didn't work out. And then that kind of slowly, that company died a slow death, and you were like doing good in the game of Survivor. You were one of the last guys on the boat, but that was hard. And then there was God moved you to a different company, which, like, God moved you there. Like, there was out of the blue and one of those things, but that was harder.
It was the worst.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really dark time. But then you ended up in a job through a friend, and now you're in a place where, you know, as you said earlier, you feel like you're doing the thing that you were made to do.
Yeah, and I think the more I think about it, the job that I'm in now, it's the longest job I've been in 5 years. I actually mentioned that to my wife a couple days ago. So, I mean, there's a lot of jumping around, but it was that God was providing abundantly providing in every single, every single transition. But it was a transition that meant something. It meant that I took away something out of every transition, and I learned and I grew and I matured in my faith and matured in my relationship with God. It had to happen in order for me to just relinquish control and know that God is in full control. It's liberating now to be able to know that and have the clarity, and now I'm in a position where, you know, no longer am I working and hoping that the work serves me, but I'm working in a capacity where I can now speak my testimony to a number of early in career sales leaders that are on my team, and tell them, hey, this is what I did. Don't do this. But out of you know, out of what God has allowed me to do, and knowing that he has me where he wants me, I'm doing the work that God has called me to do. So I guess, what am I trying to say? I guess because I'm fulfilled in that I coach, lead, develop, mentor others, and that is my passion and that's my gift, that's what energizes me, that's what allows me to speak the gospel into others on a daily basis. I mean, it happens almost every single day at work. And I truly enjoy doing it. It's no longer that I'm trying to make a certain amount of money. It's I'm doing the work that God's called me to do. And the money that happens to end up every other week in my account just is a byproduct of what I do. It's no longer a focus.
Yeah. And the language that we use around evangelism is like, we should be praying for the folks that God's put in our path and then living a life that demonstrates their gospel demonstration or demonstrates the gospel. But then gospel conversation, and that when the gospel starts seeping into different areas of your life, you are not going to be able to have significant conversations about those areas of your life without talking about how your faith has mattered. So when it comes to work, because that's a big deal, like, you're not going to have, and people talk about work all the time, you're not going to be able to have a significant conversation about work without talking about your faith. And now your job is to mentor people and part of that is mentoring them through their work journey. And so part of your job is to talk about your work journey, which inevitably is going to lead you with opportunities to talk about your faith. And you talk about different opportunities you have like that almost every week.
Yeah, I mean, on an almost daily basis, I do more listening. I feel like I'm a counselor at work, and it's great because I love that. And so I do more listening, but then I can speak to them and in response to the experiences that I've had. And again, it further solidifies that this is why God allowed me to go through that, and that's why this was so difficult. Because and I even last week had a conversation about my final 9 months of this stretch where I was looking for clarity and understanding, where I said I wouldn't have it was extremely difficult to go through, but I would do it all over again if it meant that I'm able to speak my testimony to a number of individuals at work. That's why I had to go through that. So now people can learn from that. And I'd go through it all over again if that's what God called me to do.
And Shannon, you said something similar about just your intentionality in getting into conversations with folks at work about your faith and how God's used that.
Yeah. So the job that I was in for a few months and then felt called to go someplace else, I've been there, kind of like Kendall. It's probably been the longest place I've been in the last few years. And I've had more time there and more conversations there about faith probably than I have in my career. And what I thought about in between services is that probably also shows the progression of faith with career as I've gone through. But, a few examples. One is this past week, even, shout out to the Harrises for Financial Peace University, just being intentional.
We should just shout out to the Harrises in general. We should. Woo! The Harrises. If you knew the Harrises, you'd understand.
So, but kind of going along that, being intentional with forming relationships. And so there was just a friend that needed help with budgeting, and so pulled out a spreadsheet that the Harrises provided a few years ago in budgeting, and at the very top of that budget is giving. And just kind of walked through each of the separate sections, and that was pretty much the first question is, you have giving as part of your budget, why is that? And she could see kind of the number of different programs that we donate to, and it was an easy conversation to explain, well, this is why we give, and this is why it's the first thing in our budget. So just kind of practical, small ways. Have had, Bible studies or talked about books with the team.
Yeah, and I, when we've talked about work over the years, God puts people in your path, and so you have the chance to share what God's doing in your life, and you're supposed to do that. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations. But I don't. I'm cautious of saying the primary purpose of your work is evangelism. Like, I think they're the foundational, like, you're made to work, and God made you because he's a worker. He made you in his image. And so being productive and stepping back and saying, it's good. Like, that's, you're made to do that. You're always going to have those opportunities, but I don't want to put the cart before the horse, maybe. But I do feel like if you're living out what God's created you to work, and you're, and especially when over time, like, it's taken a while to get to those places, those opportunities probably come a little bit more naturally. And I'd say this too, man, once you start looking for those opportunities, it was one of the things that I dislike about working at church, is because I didn't always work at church, and I had just so many opportunities at my last job, and God used it, and it was great. It was fun, When you start looking for those opportunities, they're all over the place, if you look for them. You had another one with a miracles book.
Yeah, so we, I had my team over, I don't know, sometime in the last year, so to speak. We're pretty lucky. I live and work fairly close to each other. And so just to celebrate kind of a busy season, we came over, and at that point, I think I was going through the book Miracles. We have some pretty strong non-believers on the team as well, and one of the staff just picked up the book, and we started talking a little bit about it, and that brought up a huge dialogue about religion and faith, just sitting around the kitchen. And I went ahead and donated the book, or gave the book, to let them kind of read it. And next thing I know, it had been a few weeks, and people would come in and say, hey, well, I let so-and-so borrow it, I finished it up. And finally, someone just brought in another copy of the book and laid it in on my desk and said, well, you're probably not going to get it back anytime soon, so in case someone else wants to read it or you want to finish it, here you go. So it's just kind of small.
Which is fantastic, because you don't know what God's going to do with that, but that's a fantastic book. Yeah. Dan, we'll finish with you, and you had a similar story of transition.
Yeah. So again, going back to 2016, so in April I stopped refereeing. My wife was staying home with our one, we're expecting our second, and I did family practice in sports medicine. I was in my ninth year of the practice, and I was burned out. I was seeing patients, I was managing that office, I was doing the marketing, doing the Chamber of Commerce, and there was an aspect of pride still, and God was still tearing away. And if you asked me then, I was like, oh, I'm not full of pride. And God is still breaking away my pride. And so in that October, I had a friend who said, hey, you should come work in clinical research. And I had an opportunity, but I didn't have peace about it. I said, all right, God, you know what? Maybe timing's not right. Well, wait. So I came up with this great plan. And I said, hey, God, here's my plan. January 2017, we'll have our second kid. You're going to provide that job. This is going to be great. And I said, here we go. I told my dad about it. I was pretty excited. Yeah. And I waited. And then May 2nd, I get this email from PRA Health Science, where I work now. And I got it, said, hey, can we do a phone review tomorrow? And I was super excited. Well, so that Monday, I talked to my dad. So Wednesday, I had this phone review. And they were like, hey, she was like, this is the best phone review. The job's practically yours, but you got to meet the team. I called my dad that night, and we talked for 10, 15 minutes. At the end, he is, hey, I love you. I'm proud of you as my son, but as you as a dad. My dad went to sleep that night, and he never woke up. And had my plan worked, I probably wouldn't have talked to my dad one more time. Had my plan worked out, when I started this new job at PRA, trust me, everybody found out real quick that I was there because God wanted me to be there. And it's opened the door for a lot of conversations because I got to talk to my dad one last time. And it was hard to wait. But it's like one of those things that Jeff talks about when he's doing something in you, the work through you. I needed to swallow my pride and my control so I could have a conversation with my earthly father one more time.
Yeah. All this stuff that we've been talking about the last 6 weeks have tried to make sure that we get it back to the essence of the gospel, and that our, you know, in Hebrews it talks about how we can rest from our works because of his work. And so his work, we tend to view work as like something that we do to justify ourselves, you know, and it gives us the significance, or it gives us the money that gives us the significance. And really, you're only going to be able to rest from that when you can rest in the significance that you have in Christ. You are no longer a slave to fear. You're a child of God because of what Christ has done on your behalf. And as that identity really takes root in you and in your heart and in your soul, and you start to see how that seeps into every area of your life, you can do this. You know, you can take a different attitude towards your work. And the commonality in these are like tough decisions, like tough realizations about the attitude that they had towards work and that they should have. And that led to certain decisions that were difficult decisions that didn't make sense in the time and required a wait. And last week, the guy that came in, John, and spoke, his last point, which was kind of out of context for the rest of his talk, he like did a left turn and said, are you willing to wait? And pointed out all the people in the Bible that had to wait. And that's just a part of it when you're walking with the Lord, is waiting, because you don't understand what he's doing. But that's, I don't know if it's him developing our trust or him proving to us that we trust him, whatever it is. But if you're really my disciples, you'll follow my commandments, and then you're going to know the truth, and the truth is going to set you free. And there's going to be times where it just doesn't make sense, you know? And so my prayer for this morning, for this series, for all of us, is that whatever it is that he's speaking to us about work, that we're open to that and listening to that and willing to make decisions that might seem like, difficult decisions, and willing to be in an area that's pretty uncomfortable, and willing to wait and look around and see where he is at work. And I'm sure these guys would love to talk to you if you wanted to hear more about any of their individual stories. But Lord, we're thankful for, I was thinking about this weekend and mini conference on marriage, Lord, and then this series on work, and how practical you are with this. And in the biggest areas of our lives, you don't leave us in some vacuum, void of information about your will or understanding of your will, but you give us a lot. And it can be hard to understand, and it can be harder to apply, in part because of our sin, Lord, and just because we do fear, and because we hesitate to trust you, Lord. But these are all opportunities for us to grow in our relationship with you. And so I'm thankful for these stories that we got to listen to, and I'm thankful that it's not about the four individuals that are on stage. It's about you. It's about your goodness to us. It's about your wisdom and what you can do if we trust you and take you at your word and take some chances in following your will, Lord. And so we're thankful for that. We love you, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Would you thank these guys for being up here this morning?